From coast to coast.
From sea to shining sea.
From the lukewarm waters of the Arctic to the North Pacific garbage patch.
From the foothills of Saudi Alberta to the bountiful fracking fields of New Brunswick.
You're listening to Terra Misinforma.
I'm Morgana Folkman.
And I'm Hamdi Issawi. And we'll be your hosts for the next half hour of environmental nonsense.
That's right, Hamdi. This week, we're asking the questions that bring you the stories that nobody in their right mind would dare to call news.
Like, what's the deal with water? Besides raining on picnics, parades, and natural resource development, so-called blue gold may not be as valuable as some environmentalists make it out to be. To clarify the issue, I'll go head-to-head with one of those wet blankets from the environmental movement.
Then, have you ever wondered what it's like behind enemy lines? Society's seedy underbelly is a dark, duplicitous, and dangerously green place that wastes not, wants not, and would love nothing better than to have you do the same. But that didn't stop us from venturing into the belly of the beast to put a face, or in this case a voice, to the threat of eco-terrorism.
And finally, it's the time of year when we celebrate the best of the best. Fête the crème de la crème. Exalt the most worthy of worthies. Yes, it's time to hand out the Ezra Levant Award for excellence in excellence in journalism.
That's where we'll end off. But first, what's pissed off Chris?
At Terra Misinforma, we pride ourselves on being a platform for provocative and fresh ideas. You can count on us to let you know which untouched rivers are best for your generic chemical release, and what time of year is ideal for bringing an endangered lemur into your home. Today, our reporter Chris Changyan Phillips has an idea that he'd like to get off his chest. It's about a certain Scandinavian nation that's become a hot tourist destination for those in search of a union of lava fields and icy slopes.
That's right, Hamdi. I just got back from Iceland. It was an incredible place. It's so beautiful. Sweeping fjords, huge mountains that just seem to tumble right into the ocean. It's a really beautiful place. And of course, you must know that it's really remarkable for the kinds of power that they produce, too, because it's almost entirely renewable power. They've turned their CO2 emissions completely around, and now they get almost all their power from hydroelectric and geothermal power. But let's not forget where that power comes from. And this is what I want to talk about today. Iceland is a hotbed of geological instability. You're probably familiar with that volcano, Eyjafjallajökull, in like 2010 that erupted and the ash cloud disrupted air traffic.
Yeah, you know, I remember getting a Google alert about that.
Yeah, so there are two other volcanoes set to erupt any time now that are going to cause similar, if not larger, eruptions, right?
And
in 1783, there was a volcano, Mount Laki, that erupted, and it caused 8 months of lava flows when it went off. And not only that, it gave off clouds of toxic fluorine gas that poisoned all the vegetation in the country, killed about half of Iceland's livestock. About a fifth of Iceland's population died. There was actually a proposal to just pick up the country and leave for Denmark. And I think that they may have had a point.
I wouldn't blame them.
I think that it's time to address the real crisis on this planet right now. Iceland is too unstable for the kind of world that we want to have.
Yeah.
So my proposal is to sink the island.
I'm sorry, did you say sink the island?
Yeah. It should be sunk below the ocean. It's the only part of the North Atlantic Ridge. It's the only part of that ridge that's above the ocean anyway. I say just put it back underneath the ocean where it belongs. Let the whales deal with the fluoride clouds, right?
Just a question. Being Iceland, wouldn't it float?
Interesting proposal, Hamdi. Further work may be needed.
That was Chris Changyan Phillips with his fresh idea on the North Atlantic question. You know what really gets my goat, Morgana?
What's that, Hamdi?
I got up early to take out the trash this morning, so I put on my ostrich skin boots and stepped outside into a pile of snow. Now I've got these water stains.
Unbelievable.
And it's got me thinking, snow, that's really just water, right? And what do we really need water for? I mean, come on, there's hockey, washing, ice for my scotch.
Hosing down activists, diluting chemical spills.
Exactly, not that much. And even in these cases, it's not really necessary. There's tons of alternatives just waiting to replace water. Now, to make sure you get the whole story, I decided to invite somebody else to come in here and convince me otherwise. Joining us today in studio is Nelly Van Hoser, an eco-conscious Canadian. Welcome to the show, Nelly.
Thanks for having me, Hamdi.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, why don't we just scrap water? What do we really need it for? I mean, there's all this hullabaloo in the media about water pollution and conservation. Is that just leftist alarmism?
I don't know, Hamdi. I think water's pretty important, you know, to live and stuff.
Okay, but I mean, we've got Gatorade, coffee, energy drinks. All of these things are just waiting to replace water.
But Hamdi, I mean, we need water to survive, like plants and animals. It's our food. Not to mention that after 3 days, you can die of dehydration, like with no water.
We've got so much of it, it hardly seems like that would be a problem. The surface of the Earth is made up of, like, what, 70% water?
You know, I heard that only 2 to 3% of that is actually drinkable fresh water. And much of that is polluted these days. Pesticides and chemicals used in agriculture pollute groundwater. As well, the poor wastewater processing, and it ends up in our food. We're really at a disadvantage right now, Hamdi, with water issues.
Yeah, but is that stuff really going to kill us?
It could, you know. There's not enough water to go around.
Last year in 2013, the southern Alberta floods ravaged the south part of the province. Maybe 100,000 or so Albertans or more in 30 different communities were affected. The government pegs the cost of the damages at over $6 billion, and that's not including the insurance claims. This is probably the costliest disaster in Canadian history. What did water do for anybody there?
You make a good point, Hamdi. But extreme weather events like this one, though not in isolation, but taken as part of an emerging trend, are tied to climate change. Did you know that greenhouse gases released by burning fossil fuels trap heat from the sun and increase the temperature, which allows the atmosphere to hold more water? Add to the fact that higher temperatures melt polar ice, releasing more water into the oceans.
Are you going to try and blame this on fossil fuels? So what, I can't drive to work in the morning anymore?
That's not what it's about, Hamdi. We all just want to live on a better planet.
All right, Nelly, but what about the Obed mine release? I'm talking about October 31st, 2013. 600 million liters of water leaked out of a tailings pond at the Obed mine and into the Athabasca River where it was swept upstream. If there wasn't water there, there'd be no problem. The coal would have just sat there. If there was no water, we wouldn't have this problem. How do you respond to that?
I can see your point, Hamdi. But it's necessary for the coal mining process to wash the coal. And now, with all that slurry released into the Athabasca River, there's going to be lead, arsenic, slowly releasing over time, fish habitat completely wiped out. It's a sad, sad story.
What about silver? I heard silver is one of those contaminants. I mean, technically, we're enriching the environment, aren't we?
There's silver, but that's along with a lot of other toxic chemicals.
The environmentalists don't really know what kind of damage is going to be there yet, right? I mean, they have to wait until the ice melts, so really there's no problem until they say there's a problem.
Well, the research is not in yet, but it looks like the tailings spill spread over 300 kilometers down the Athabasca River, all the way to Lake Athabasca. There's going to be a lot of damage for a lot of years.
Now, the truth about water is it's not really as sparse as science would have us believe it is, right? I mean, sure, 2 to 3% of our water may be fresh, but for crying out loud, there's like water on Mars and now maybe even the moon. And some studies are showing that it's underneath the Earth, just waiting for us to get at. Isn't there some sort of proof to show you that there's plenty of water just waiting for the taking?
Well, yeah, there was a recent study. Apparently, large deposits of water deep within the Earth's surface, they discovered some wet diamonds that contain a certain chemical that needs water to be formed. But really, We're so far from being able to access that water. We don't even know if we can use it.
So what you're saying is that science doesn't know.
Science keeps on asking, Hamdi.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Yeah, I guess so.
I want to thank you for showing up today in your pajamas.
You know, Hamdi, comfort is key. Maybe you should wear your pajamas, too. It'd help you relax a little bit.
Thanks, Nelly. But I like to let it all hang out on air. That was Nelly Van Hoser from Canada. Next up, Terra Misinforma pulls back the curtain on the Emerald City. And guess what? It's full of terrorists.
You hear news on Terra Misinforma all the time about the misguided misdeeds of Canada's environmentalists. Fortunately, our great government is starting to catch on. In recent years, politicians, pundits, and police have all identified environmentalists as the leading threat to the nation. To tell us more, we've got Trevor Chow Fraser in studio. Welcome, Trevor.
Thanks for having me. Environmentalists are indeed the leading threat to this great tax-paying nation of ours. Canada's first-ever counter-terrorism strategy calls on taxpayers to remain vigilant against domestic extremism in the name of environmentalism and white supremacy.
And of course, Joe Oliver, now our Honourable Finance Minister, warned against environmental and other radical groups receiving funding from foreign special interest groups.
The threat is clear. But would you know how to identify the threat if it walked up to you in the street? How can you tell the rugged beard of a lumberjack from the filthy weasel's den on the face of an environmentalist? How well do you know Canada's homegrown radicals and other environmentalists?
Well, that's what you're here to help us with, right, Trevor? Let's give a listen to this Terra Misinforma special investigative feature. Spawns of Satan, Canada's terrifying eco-terrorists.
They've been called radicals, extremists, terrorists. They consort with white supremacists and anarchists. They will stop at nothing to achieve their agenda. No cost is too high. No cost to jobs. No cost to growth. No cost to the economy. But who are these people, really? Who are these environmentalists? Well, this reporter was determined to find out, incurring no small risk to my personal bodily integrity. I would drag these shadowy figures out into the harsh light of public scrutiny. Step one, infiltrate an environmentalist gathering. Security research shows these extremists operate over trans-global electronic networks, communicating in a kind of cyber patois. They form local cells and gather regularly to plot and strategize.
Craigslist.
Fortunately, our crack detective work tracked down a local cell.
Well, this looks promising.
Like cultists or white supremacists, these people like to appropriate symbols from ancient cultures to their own nefarious ends. The cell I infiltrated used the alien term potlatch to describe their meetings. Wearing a wire, I attended a meeting under the guise of a sympathetic student reporter. We met in a dark, unlit basement. They refused to use electricity. Though at first I was reticent, I found the environmentalists relished the opportunity to express their dark desires, listing their extremist credentials like preening depraved peacocks. While each interaction was enlightening, one man stood out from all the rest. Was that the base notes of gunpowder I smelled in his lentil loaf? A terrorist keffiyeh sticking out from under his organic hemp tunic? I knew I needed to take him aside to probe a little further, a little deeper.
Okay, ringleader. Give me your name and your cover.
Eric Mettler. I'm a truck driver.
And what sort of things go on at these so-called potlucks?
We try to be pretty careful. There's some people have like food intolerances, that kind of thing. Then there's always the possibility of, trying something pretty exotic and having a fairly explosive reaction to it. I've got this one curry recipe that I got off the internet. And let me tell you, it's like a bomb going off.
Are you a jihadist?
Well, I think, I'm pretty religious, pretty religious about recycling.
So you're a tree hugger?
Well, I mean, I've been called that before, but I don't think having a garden and growing my own vegetables and trying to use biodiesel and that kind of thing makes me a tree hugger necessarily. But
is that because you're a pinko?
Again, I think that I'm, you know, I share the burden of surviving with the people around me in my community, and they're, you could call that communism if you want, but I would reject that term.
So you're a pinko commie tree hugger.
I guess it depends on where you look. I mean, if all you ever do is watch CNN and Fox News, you might think so, but I think I'm pretty mainstream. I think most Canadians would agree with me on that.
I mean, you yourself have told me that you're downloading recipes from anarchist cookbooks online to take down the government because you want to preserve some kind of space on this great country for trees instead of people.
I think I've been misquoted at some point. I'm not sure where we went off the rails, but I I don't think you can draw those conclusions from what I said.
This is not a laughing matter. This is serious journalism.
I started to sense that my welcome was perhaps overstayed. This was clearly one hippie ready to snap. And I didn't want to be around when the bicycle bomb went off. So I made my escape.
Thanks again for coming. We'll see you.
I only hope that along the way, I've helped you to see just who Canada's radical extremist ideologues truly are. For Terra Misinforma, I'm Trevor Chow Fraser.
Thanks, Trevor. A fascinating look inside the den of Canada's terrifying eco-terrorists. Next up, the big reveal on this year's most anticipated journalism award.
And it's back this year. That most excellent award, the Ezra Levant Award for Excellence in Excellence in Journalism. As you're probably aware, there's only one man who really beats the heap when it comes to heaping it on. You know it. It's Ezra Levant. He's always asking those unasked questions and leading us down the road of shining truth. His 2012 novel, Ethical Oil, helped us understand that the only ethical oil is the God-given oil in Canada, the cleanest, the most humanistic. He helped us realize that oil sands oil is really the fair trade coffee of the world. And he's constantly, unapologetically, exposing fat cat anti-oil sands activists like David Suzuki and foreign-funded eco-terrorists like Greenpeace.
The man's a saint! The same way his so-called charitable foundation gets away with political lobbying, the same way his junk science gets passed off as education in schools, this is just another case of a left winged celebrity, getting away with things that anyone else would be crucified for as a dirty old man. That's sickening, Suzuki.
He stops us from being distracted by the environmental extremists who dither on about toxic tailing ponds and other environmental issues. So, of course, once again, we're awarding this award to none other than Ezra Levant. Woo! Ow, ow!
Ezra, 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 Ezra.
Mrs. Morgana.
I'm sorry, this is just in. Mr. Levant has unfortunately pulled himself out of the race. Christy Blatchford of the National Post has reported Ezra Levant is saying that he's not a reporter.
Oh.
I don't think in my entire life I've ever called myself a reporter.
What? No. This paragon of free speech who tirelessly shakes down all who disagree with him has yielded his spot?
I'm feeling faint.
No one can really fill his shoes, really. He is the epitome of excellence in excellence in journalism.
It's so true. But I do have an idea, actually. One that will allow us to honor the shining example of Ezra Levant and all that he holds dear. I'm talking about pissing off the hippies. It always pleases Ezra to blow the whistle on David Suzuki and all the other eco-terrorists. So, in honor of Ezra's dogged pursuit of Mr. Suzuki, we're pleased to announce an award to an event that really pisses those guys off. How about this year we present the inaugural The Biggest Kick in the Balls Award for Excellence in Excellence, the David Suzuki and Other Environmentalists Honorary Grump Award for Biggest Kick in the Balls. Hamdi Asawi, bring us the nominees.
This year we have three official nominees for this most prestigious of prizes. First, the federal government under the Conservative Party and the closure of the Experimental Lakes Area. The Experimental Lakes Area, or ELA, is an internationally unique research station encompassing 50 formerly pristine freshwater lakes in Ontario. The area occupies a unique position, not only in Canada, but in the world, as a dedicated research facility for ecosystem-scale experimental investigations and long-term monitoring of ecosystem processes. It was previously run by Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Bill C-38 from the federal Conservative government amended the Fisheries Act and defunded the project.
You know, closing this probably pissed off David Schindler a lot.
One thing that I find really troubling is the move away from evidence-based science being used as a basis for policy to where the policy is made first and then the science is expected or crafted through propaganda to fit the policy agenda. I see that at both federal and provincial levels. I see it in spades in the oil sands, for example. That isn't a healthy thing for a country that purports to be a democracy. And I think it ought to be something that we as academics and as citizens of this country ought to put an end to.
Nominee number two, the federal government under the Conservative Party for the closures at Libraries and Archives Canada. A century's worth of environmental research resources at the St. Andrews Biological Station in New Brunswick are gone, as well as the Freshwater Institute Library in Winnipeg and the Northwest Atlantic Fisheries Center in St. John's, Newfoundland. While purporting to have digitized at least part of the collections, the government in fact kept no record of what was thrown away, what was sold, and what was simply lost.
The collections, you know, were apparently world-class, but libraries, those dusty old things... I have an iPad. I'm not reading books anymore. They say that no records were kept, but really, who cares? I did hear a great quote recently from a scientist talking about the closures. He said, "I saw a private consultant firm working for Manitoba Hydro back up a truck and fill it with Manitoba data and materials that the public had paid for. I was profoundly saddened and appalled. It's obvious that this government cares little for public discourse."
Well, I, for one, really like the style and flair of a good old-fashioned book burning. Apparently that happened, too. David Schindler talked about the closures, and it's really obvious the issue got his dander up. He said, in retrospect, I am not surprised at all to find them trashing scientific libraries. Paranoid ideologues have burned books and records throughout human history to try to squelch dissenting visions that they view as heretical. And to anyone who worships the great God economy monotheistically, well, environmental science is heresy.
And finally, the Alberta oil sands for its ongoing environmental damage to the Athabasca River Basin and its inhabitants. 2013 saw the Obed coal slurry spill, the largest spill in Canadian history, flow into the Athabasca River. The spill was six times greater than that most notorious of oil spills, the Exxon Valdez, which poured its glorious obsidian wealth upon the ocean. But many years of groundwork had already been laid prior to the Obed spill. We're talking about rare forms of cancer and an increase in autoimmune diseases in Fort Chipewyan residents, but also contamination of fish, water, and sediments in the Peace and Athabasca Delta. They've also overseen the fluctuation of water levels in Lake Athabasca and associated impacts on Saskatchewan First Nations and fisheries, and the increasing acidification and loss of fisheries in northern Alberta and Saskatchewan.
You know, David Schindler said that he doubts whether it will be possible to tell any effects there, but it might be possible that some of the mercury and other contaminants will add to the burdens of fish that are already too high. He thinks that past data is not very good, but he guesses that it will be impossible to distinguish this spill from the total. Man, these oil companies are real heroes, taking that ball and running with it. They just keep on keeping on. The righteous development of the oil sands have 99% of the basin leased to multinational companies. They will go on providing the world with that most ethical of fuel, oil sands oil, for decades.
This nominee has a lot going for it. Yeah, the oil industry has really put its nose to the grindstone for many years when it comes to polluting the Athabasca.
They're going to be a tough competitor to beat.
The envelope, please. Thank you. And the award goes to the federal government for its closure of the National Research Archives.
The clear winner. Personally, I think the drama of a book burning really captured the judge's attention.
Yes, definitely. I mean, they were all fantastic candidates, but book burning? Come on. This is more than an attack on academic freedom. It is an attempt to guarantee public ignorance. Bravo, federal government. Bravo.
I, for one, look forward to following all these nominees, successful and otherwise, for years to come. Well, thanks for listening to another grand episode of Terra Misinforma. We've been your hosts, Hamdi Essaoui and Morgana Folkman.
Special thanks to Chris Changyan Phillips and Trevor Chow Fraser for contributing their talents.
If you want to find us online, definitely do not visit the site of our arch nemesis, Terra Informa, at terrainforma.ca.
Thanks for listening, and until next time,
it's been a pleasure to misinform you.